Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Now, I'm not a sneakerhead, but I'm a shoe guy. And as Naked Tay, I was very giddy yesterday. I was showing him that I bought a couple of pairs of Cole Haans. They had a great online sale for Cole Haans. And I remember, they're delivered, Nate. And I ran home, and I'm an idiot. But I get excited about things like that. So I just want to mention, I don't know how you could do this with your camera work, Jake. We'll see how good you are. I like Stan Weber's shoes this morning. Those caught my eye. I'm a shoe guy.
Incredibly comfortable-looking shoes.
That's a damn fine-looking shoe right there. I like that.
Those are Cole Haans.
That's work or play right there is what that is. You know that, Jake?
That's the most comfortable dress shoe you probably put your foot in right there.
That's what I like. I bought a pair for ring announcing, getting in and out of the cage in the ring. I love them.
And they look good, too.
Well, says you. But I just wanted to mention I like Stan's shoes. So
I wish I would have known about the sale.
Hey, it was a good, it was like 60% off in a couple hours. I was like, hey, hold on here.
My wife always lets me know that like once a year they do a sale like that, or they used to at Nordstrom. I don't know if they still do since it's changing locations. But
this is all online.
You can get them at half price once a year over there. And she'd always let me know about that because those Cole Haans are nice.
I wanted to mention Stan's shoes so we could get the segment started on the right foot.
Darn it, I put up my left foot, though.
That's right. Well, it's backwards on TV. Stan, I don't know if you looked at the standings, but the Royals are in first place at 7-4 right now.
I've not only looked at the standings, I've looked at the Royals live and in person. I was out at Kauffman Stadium.
Isn't that wonderful to go out there?
For the first time since the 2019 season,
which
right?
game did you go to?
I went to the first home game, the first night game of the year.
Oh, nice.
Wow. So that was Monday night or Tuesday? Monday night?
Yeah, that would have been Monday night, right?
Monday night. I was out there.
Yeah, when I went out there, and it had been a year, and just being out there and seeing everything. I mean, it's beautiful anyway. It doesn't matter if it'd been 24 hours since you've been out to Kauffman Stadium. It's beautiful. But just, you know how it is on opening day, and everything is just immaculate. And that's one of the things that's, different now, and at least hopefully I'm going to carry this with me moving forward. It's the appreciation for things like that. Just the appreciation for walking into the ballpark and looking like, oh, look how beautiful this is, and being able to be at the game. I'm glad you went out there and had a great time because it was so much fun. And just to watch this team now and how good they are to start off the season, 7-4.
I said last week that I'm a big Salvi guy.
Yeah, well.
I mean, Alex Gordon, my son Stanton, loves baseball more than any of my buddies and a group of people that we talk to, hang around. Stanton truly loves baseball from playing in high school all the way through. So it's a very pure love, an old school love, maybe that you guys have as well. But a lot of modern kids aren't into baseball like that. He really loves the game, and he loved Alex Gordon for a long, long time before he hit it big and we went to the World Series and all of that. So, like I said, it was a lot of fun for most of my buddies who were like, no, Salvador Perez, not Alex Gordon. So I think, like football, which is what I know more about, when you got a good quarterback in the huddle, he makes the other 10 players play better. That's part of why you look good as a quarterback. It's not just you and your talent, not to take away anything from Patrick Mahomes, but it's just making everyone else that much more inspired. And I think it's even more important in baseball, knowing Mike McFarlane, for instance, and some guys, not a ton of baseball guys, but to me, the catcher is even more influential on how his pitching staff works and a quarterback is on the rest of the team, because calling the right pitches, keeping him steady, working through things is just incredible. And I think having Salvador Perez available makes every pitch for the Royals a better pitch. And so I'm high on that. And I've been a Dayton Moore guy, I mean, from when everyone wanted him fired before anyone thought about 2014. I said many times on his station when asked, and I don't get asked a lot about baseball, but I believe in Dayton Moore big time.
You know, Jake's high on a lot of things, not just Dayton Moore, so he can identify with that. Jake has encouraged me to seek out a tweet of the day. And so I've done that, Jake, for you. Do you have
a
favorite sounder or something to alert us that it is the tweet of the day?
I'll find something in here.
And
tweet of the day?
Right. I'm watching.
Or this one?
The post-game coverage. I'm reading tweets, people very happy about the game. And then I spotted the tweet. It was tweet of the night, really. And I'm very happy to say it's delivered by Curtis Seabolt, who, let me tell you, man, you know Curtis. You've known Curtis Seabolt longer than us.
Yep.
The Curtis you get in person,
Curtis Seabolt,
is a sweetheart. He's a big teddy bear.
He's one of the nicest humans I've ever met. Doesn't have a mean bone in his body.
What about the Curtis on Twitter?
Well, he's a little more. So it's like, they say that when it comes to having kids, the first one's all sugar and the second one's all spice.
Oh.
Curtis is like, in person, all sugar, and on Twitter, he's all spice.
He's very spicy. And I like this because you know that the 2014 World Series still bothers me, even though they won the next year. And so, you know, Curtis Seabolt, 9 hours ago. Play one more sounder and we'll lead right into it. Here is Curtis at K. Seabolt, 9 hours ago, tweets, "For the record, Joe Panic can still bite my ass."
Oh. Curtis Seabolt.
So can we get a round of applause there from the studio audience? Curtis Seabolt, not looking for
the record.
Right.
He wants it on the record.
So Stan, even Curtis, even though he's very happy about these wins, he's still got a little salt left from the 14 World Series. And I can't blame him, but I just wanted to make sure that the people on
just
TV
send the runner that home and win the game right there.
Yeah. Thank you. Damn it.
We had this conversation.
Yeah, we're on TV, right? Can you see this?
You don't want to do this, do you? I don't want to
do
this.
I can do that at third base. Like, keep running, dude.
Make him make the play.
I'd run. I would have.
How many times have you seen this week unable to make the easiest of plays?
Was that the game you were at? Was that the game you were at where the pitcher threw it in the bounced?
Well, I saw Little League Baseball by the Royals in the day I went.
That's the only reason. Yeah, that was
reason.
A bad game. Yeah, yeah.
Gunning the guy down at third instead turns into a missed. Third baseman doesn't catch it, so they score one run only because the pitcher can't throw it to home. Yep. Then they score two runs.
Yep.
And no, it was just a comedy of errors. Mm-hmm. The Royals had one good inning where they scored three runs. And instead of being tied 3-3, they were down 4-3 because they'd basically given up all four runs. So that's in baseball, one game doesn't matter that much. We had a great time, but it was the worst fielding. But yeah. I just, all week long, how many times have you seen where guys are on the run and they should be out, and there's the catcher dropping the ball spinning away from them, and really, how did they miss it? Sometimes it's like, how did they miss the ball?
So Curtis Seabolt receives a Border Patrol t-shirt for authoring the tweet of the night.
Congrats, he probably doesn't have any of those.
Congrats to K-Dog out there. Mm-hmm. We will take a break back after this on Sports Radio 810 WHP. Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Explaining to Stan Weber some of the dynamics behind the Border Patrol. And look who's here.
Something just happened that I'm stunned by. Considering what a community our show is and a community Kansas City is, Stan Weber and Mike Boddicker just met for the
first
time.
Are you kidding me?
Come in here. I would have
do it on the air. Come in here and meet him on the air so people can see this special moment.
Stan introduced himself, and I because we were all talking, and I thought, oh, Mike, I would have introduced you if I had any idea. I just would have assumed that you guys would have, you know.
Well, I have a lot of people tell me that they love listening, and they think they know us very well by listening, and I would be that listener saying, I feel like I know Mike Boddicker well. His daughter taught at the school my kids went to in grade school, so it felt like there's a connectivity. Mike McFarland's kids went to school with my kids, so I feel like I know a little bit more about baseball. But no, I've never met Mike. He's awesome.
Incredible.
As a guest that you guys have. And I thought there was going to be a big party that Jake was going to put together so we could meet everybody.
Well,
it's happening.
Here's the deal.
It is happening.
Stan, maybe you put pressure on him.
Stan
thank
gets
you.
A gold star for the day.
Because guess
Stan
what?
Stan gets is the guest.
He ain't listening to me and Nate about it.
I'm just another listener who listens to Mike Boddicker.
You
talk logic. I mean, it's not all this new political correctness. Just tell me the truth.
Oh, man.
Just lay it out there. And Jake, I think you're the same guy. And he said that we're going to get together. It didn't say when. It could be 2020.
Stepping on toes. You got to put pressure on him.
You just said earlier that a quarterback makes the people around them better, and part of that's by holding them accountable to a standard. And you just lit a fire under that young man over there, and that is the greatest thing.
I don't need any more fire.
How about
we'll
this?
See.
This guy damn near broke his hand trying to put his backpack on this morning. That's where he said it. The Boddicker Foundation, through last night's bourbon raffle. How about this? To Children's Mercy, this is a giant check. I sent it to YouTube, but look, just you can see the giant check anyway. $81,775.
Wow.
How about that?
And this is the first annual?
Yes.
Can I ask you a
great
question?
Job, Mike. And great job to everyone. It's such a great idea. When I heard it on the air,
how about
and I
that?
Went to the office, by the time I walked in, people in the office were talking about it and calling their buddies saying, hey, this is a great thing. Let's put let's go buy some raffle.
Did you pick through my name a few times and discard it?
No.
No. Because
I hope you did.
Because I've had several friends and family members for whom I bought tickets that are livid that they didn't win anything. They're mad at me.
Apparently a lot of people bought tickets.
Right. Well, if it was $81,000 worth of tickets, then there were a lot of tickets.
You got
a guy
like there's two people now that I want to do business with. One of them is C. McDaniel from this damn Royals auction. He's buying everything. I just want to have lunch. I just want to pick his brain.
Yeah.
The other guy, you got a guy that won a few times, that bought a lot of tickets, Jonathan Yen. Me and you need to sit down.
Jonathan Yen's got all the bourbon, huh?
Jonathan Yen is, he's a power player.
He bought a couple tickets.
He's a power broker.
Got a lot of yen.
That's right. Give the microphone real quick to Mike Boddicker. Mike, if you want to say anything to all the people, because a lot of listeners bought tickets for the raffle, including Jonathan Yen. How about that?
16,000 tickets. We had $81,700. The people were... I said it the other day, this city's unbelievable. I mean, if I could have picked a place when I came, I mean, my free agency, it was the best thing I ever did is moving here, living here. Great city, great people, and they help each other. They stick up for, I have a soft spot for kids, sick kids. And when we started this foundation, it basically was, yeah, my kids knew where it was going to go. It was going to go to Children's Mercy whatever we raised. And we weren't expecting any of this. I mean, we were hoping, you know, if we could get $10,000, $15,000, I'd have been happy as a lark.
$80,000.
It just blew up here in the city, and the people were great. And I can't thank them enough. I can't. And you and Gary and my family and the people who worked on this, every dime goes to Children's Mercy. Anything over that, we're going to cover. So every dime we raise goes to Children's Mercy.
And look, and by the same token, hey, a guy like Mike Boddicker lives here after his playing career, doesn't have to put his name to something like this and the foundation to raise money for Children's Mercy Hospital, and that's for everybody in the community and really around our country that come and take advantage of the wonderful services from Children's Mercy Hospital. Over $80,000 from the Boddicker Family Foundation. That is awesome. Back after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Thank you so much for joining us. Stephen St. John and Nate Buchady. Mike Boddicker has stopped by. And he says he wanted to hear, he's here for the decision. Now there's, Nate's taking a picture of Mike Boddicker and Stan Weber in studio.
I'm taking video now.
Jake, were you aware of this, that Stan Weber and Mike Boddicker had never met? I mean, that, you know.
I had no idea.
You just assume, right?
Right.
That's why it is a great idea to have a Border Patrol get together, but boy, that doesn't. When you hear Stan Weber ask you about this, does that motivate you more to do this? Or now that you're getting so much pressure, so much heat, are you saying that I'd like to wash my hands of this? How do you react to this,
please? I'll turn this damn bus around!
It's a tremendous amount of pressure from all sides. Mike Boddicker's in here turning the screws. I mean, there's a lot of people that want to make this happen. The listener is hoping for ways. And look, I told you, we're going to have a few listener spots when we have this get-together to bid on it, and the money's going to go to various charities supported by the Border Patrol.
They might like hearing these conversations
right. That
we have off the air.
And some of them might
they would love it.
Hate some of the conversations that we have off the air, but that's fine. But are you dug in here? Do you feel like, I'm going to get this done, Jake, or now are you overwhelmed by the enormity of this?
I'll get it done.
Do you want me to really?
Mike said he'll help.
I was going to say, you want me to really make Jake?
We know he has some bourbon sources.
Let Nate do it.
No, I want to. Yes. If you're asking me if I want you to make Jake mad for the show's purposes, yes.
Okay, here we go. Hey, Jake, I can help out if you want.
There it is.
This hour of the Border Patrol is brought to you by the Lofts at City Center. Boutique living in City Center, Lenexa, located at 435 and Renner. Now open. For more information, go to theloftscc.com.
Did you say something, Nate?
If it's too much work for you or too overwhelming, I'm here to help. I just want you to know that.
I don't need your damn help.
See, there's nothing more likely to make Jake mad than me offering to help.
I don't want this on social media just because, I don't know, but will you record this on just on my
okay.
Well, record it on my. I don't. Right. Yeah, I'm afraid you'll post this and make fun of me.
Oh no, I'm not going to post
you
this. As far as you know,
sure you will.
You got slightly.
I'm trying to put that through glass, by that's
yeah,
how nervous
you can't
I am.
Do it. All right.
Mike's got me unsettled now. He's here. All right, so he says he's ready. By the way, I received a text message. We've got Stan Weber, Mike Boddicker, Nate Bucati, Jake Gutierrez coming up. We have Stan's going to be with us until Gary is on. And then Mike McFarland, we'll see how pissed off Matt gets because Gary will run long with the segment. And then Tim Grunhard will be in studio in the 9 o'clock hour. So this is a wild day. Big stars on the Border Patrol, and all of them wondering if Jake will ever put together the Border Patrol social gathering, which we'll find out, I'm sure, in the next couple of months. So it's all good. Mike, and you're here, just you want to hear...
I want to hear where Phil's...
You heard, I talked enough about it last night, right?
That's all I want.
Okay.
I want to see Phil...
Phil St. John.
And you guys have gone through this, you know, right?
Oh, yes.
We've gone through it a lot of times.
Someday this could be you, so
hey,
don't you get fresh over there.
This is how fast I know that it goes. The first time that I ever spent any real quality time with Stephen St. John... When I first came to this radio station, they said, you and this Stephen St. John are going to drive up to River Falls, Wisconsin together.
Hold that, because we're going to tell Phil that
okay.
story. That's a story designed to embarrass Phil.
Okay, good.
Right?
Yeah.
Because we know the ending.
It just blows my mind that's the same kid that's now about to announce where he's going to college.
I hope it's the same kid. Wouldn't that be a twist?
Well, his voice is a lot deeper
It'd
now.
Be like a Lifetime movie. It's actually a different kid. We switched to 10 years old. I hope that's not the case. All right. Do we have him? And he, I'm going to tell you, he better make this decision because he says, I'm going to wait. All right.
Oh, Europe, the final countdown. Oh, no.
One more. Now let's go to the phone. First and foremost, before anything else, happy 18th birthday to Phil St. John. Phil, how do you feel? You went to sleep a boy, and you wake up a man.
I'm still kind of tired.
Right.
Well, then you really are, man.
Hey, men get tired, too. I'm a man, and I'm tired 90% of the time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you feel good, though? Are you excited about your 18th birthday, at least?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm excited.
It sounds like it. All right, so we have dignitaries here. Stan Weber is in studio. Mike Boddicker made a special trip in here. Nate Bucati, of course, is here. Godfather Jake is here. So please say hello to Stan and Mike and everyone that's here because you have a very important studio audience waiting patiently for your decision.
Hello, everybody. Thank you for attending.
We are ready, Phil. Congratulations on this opportunity. I remember meeting Phil out at the Speedway.
Oh, geez.
And he was a young guy. We were watching the races together.
Oh, yeah. I was going through all these pictures to send in for his senior, and I came across a picture of them. I know just what you're talking about.
Yep.
That day at the
south end of the Speedway. We had a suite up there.
That's right.
Eating some food before the roar of the cars started.
Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and guess Phil was eating the food. Okay, so we got to tell a story first that's going to be kind of embarrassing, but maybe not. Is that okay, Phil?
I don't know which story you're
talking
about.
Right, well, it doesn't matter because we're going to do it anyway. So finish telling the story because this is just an example because I've been doing this show forever, and I sometimes don't even realize, like, how long I've been doing the show with Nate You know, it seems like forever.
Sometimes it feels like a lifetime in one week.
So the first time you met this 18-year-old man that's on the phone right now.
Yeah, so I had just started working at Sports Radio 810, and they said, hey, we want you to drive up to River Falls, Wisconsin with Stephen St. John. And I'd been listening to the Morning AM Mayhem and all that stuff with Jason Whitlock and Stephen St. John and this big, larger-than-life St. John character who was into boxing and all this stuff. And I'm like, oh, boy, this is going to be interesting. We're going to spend 10 hours in a car together.
A convertible, no
yeah,
less.
Yeah, we got like the car dealership had sponsored us and given us like a convertible, you know, to drive up there.
Let our hair down.
And Stephen tells me, hey, my fifth-grade son, Richie, I think Richie was in fifth grade at the time.
That sounds right.
Is gonna ride up there with us. And it's crazy to me to think he was in fifth grade at that time. And so I pull up to the St. John household in the Northland, and Stephen comes out to load up the car, and Richie comes out. Your mom came out, introduced herself to me.
Oh, right.
She was just so nice. And she, now, you take
so
good
you
care
did,
of Stephen.
You did meet my mom.
Yes, absolutely. She came out and introduced herself to me. And then as we were getting ready to leave.
I'm sorry, he cusses so much. It's not my fault. It's his father's fault. He took him to see bad movies.
This tiny little Phil St. John, and I don't remember how old he was. What would he have been about?
So he's 6 years younger than Richie, so maybe kindergarten. So yeah. When you were in kindergarten, what grade was Richie in?
He was in sixth grade, so I was like just before.
Right. Yeah. So he was the year before
pre-K.
Kindergarten. Yeah. Pre-K.
So the cutest little kid comes running out.
We're
the
pulling
front
out
door.
Of the driveway. Okay, yeah. Everyone, we're backing out of the driveway.
And Steven's in the middle of telling me, you know, this is kind of tough for me. I really, you know, I'm close with my mom and my kids, and I'm going to be gone for a long time, and I'm a little worried about it. While he's talking about how hard this is going to be for him, this little 4-year-old kid comes sprinting out of the front door, screaming, "Dad!"
In tears.
And he's crying.
For Richie, too, but I mean, just, we were leaving. He comes running out there, and he's, you know, tears are flowing.
Yeah. Richie, don't leave. Yeah.
Please don't leave me.
That little kid is gone.
And he would have gone
to college.
Right, but you
now
couldn't go.
Now his dad's
going
to cry.
Now that's reverse. It's like wherever he goes, I'm going to burst out of the door. Please don't leave me. Do you remember that day, Phil?
No, I don't.
Well, you cried a lot, I could tell you that. So, and I'm just going to, I think you might have just had a shirt on. And, you know, you ran out there because you were playing and having fun.
I didn't have any kids yet at that time, I don't
think. Right, well.
And it was an eye-opener. And then I spent the next 10 hours getting to know Stephen St. John.
Yeah, was it an eye-opener?
It was.
I just, you know, and it was difficult because, okay, Phil, we're going to be back in a week. Yep. Okay, I think he's good. I think we're good to leave. We get out there and he's chasing us down the driveway. All right, Phil, do you have anything to say before you make your decision? Do you have any prepared statement?
I do not have a prepared statement.
Any people you want to thank, Phil?
Yeah, anyone you want to thank along for the process along the way? Or, no, don't thank me. Thank your mom, but thank, you know.
Mom.
Anything, you want to thank Namdi, one of your great friends from St. Pius?
Yes. I'd like to thank a lot of my friends from school just helping me talk about what they're kind of doing and get me like an idea of the kind of college that I want to go into.
Right. And Namdi, we found out, is going to KU for broadcast journalism.
That
so I'm gonna, Nate, I'm
like
going to need you
guy.
To take Namdi under his wing.
And
we could somehow get Greg
Smart
Gurley
kid.
To be his mentor.
No.
That'd be fantastic.
Whoa.
What?
Way to go, Namdi.
Right. So we're gonna take care of he's got connections with Greg Gurley.
Sounds like a future intern.
How's that sound, Phil? We'll take care
sounds
of Namdi.
Good.
All right, so are you ready? Do you want to do this, or are we going to wait another week?
You know, I'm not sure.
Oh, jeez. He's milking this for everything. You take it away. You talk. I'm done talking.
Okay, well, after probably about a month after I was supposed to have this decision in, according to my dad's deadline, I am proud to announce that I will be remaining at home and going to UMKC.
All right.
Wow.
Hey, you know what? Whatever the answer would have been, you know I'm super proud, right?
Right.
And it's just for you to have these opportunities. And I got a little emotional because, you know, I forgot the part I forgot about the story, but Nate told was was your grandma being there, right? And you know, coming out there to meet Nate and everything else, and she wanted nothing more, you know, to see you than to see you grow up and become the man that you've become. And like, that's what I'm thinking about right now, for her to hear that, you know, no matter where you're going to school, right? Because, you know, for people, I've talked about this, you know, my mom wasn't given the opportunity to graduate from high school because of the circumstances that she faced. And that was always her biggest regret, not being able to go to college. And for you to, all these years later, and thinking about that and thinking about that moment, I can't, man, you know how proud she would be of you. And I'm just glad that she was around to be with you for your first, you know, 3-4 years of your life. And she made a big impact, man. And I just, you made her so proud. You made me proud, your mom proud. And I love you with all my heart, kid. And so now you got to put up with me. You got to have to watch all the Canelo fights and all the Royals games and hear me rant and rave when Missouri basketball is on. And we'll rant and rave together during the Chiefs games. But, man, congratulations, Phil. That's awesome. I'm excited. Let's go. Let's go! Rue up! Any other final comments, Phil?
None. I have none.
Is it a relief to finally say where you're going and get me off your back? I wasn't on your back, kind of, was I? Or no? Was
no,
I?
No, but I was messing with you. I would, for people that don't know, I was wearing workout shirts and I was wearing Wichita State shirts while I was working out. Just trying to mess with them, and I wouldn't give them any hints at all about what I was doing.
No, listen. So I went and picked him up the last, like at school, he'd come from working out, and he'd have a Wichita State shirt on. And I said, I go, just tell me. Don't do it. Just tell me. If it's just tell me, and we, you know. And he just kind of smiles. I don't know. Hey, they gave me a couple of shirts. When am I going to not wear them? Right? How many times did you do that?
Probably like 5 times.
He kept coming home. I go, you know, UMKC gave you. You can wear that one if you want.
I think he was telling you, because the Wichita State shirt became a workout shirt. Yeah. When he's going to see his girlfriend, he's going to be wearing UMKC.
That's right. Yeah, there you go.
You excited?
Yeah.
You should be. And let me tell you, you got a scholarship from UMKC, a scholarship from the Block Business School for the Launchpad program, and a scholarship from the Hispanic Development Fund. And he worked his ass off to get those. And so, congratulations, Phil. I love you.
Way to go, Phil.
And how about tonight? Let's go celebrate. Let's go celebrate tonight your 18th birthday and your commitment to UMKC. All right.
All right.
Have a great day, school. I love you.
Thank you. I love you too.
That's Phil St. John. I held it together. Those aren't tears on my face, Nate. Don't say that.
You got me crying over
I'm
here.
I'm sweating. I'm overweight, so it makes things hot in here. So I'm sweating. I'm, you know, when
there's a lot of people in here.
Well, Mike
in studio.
Down. I said I'm overweight. Mike.
Stephen Stout.
Yeah, he's 30.
Yeah, one of the winners last night was Stephen Stout. I said, well, here I am. So I decided that's going to be my alias whenever I go check into a hotel or do things. I'm Stephen Stout now. So
I tell you what, man, I'm in a room full of dads that have these phenomenal relationships with their sons, and it's like role models for me. You know, I hope to have the kind of relationship with my boys that to all three of you guys do with your kids. But the thing that hit me the hardest, Steven, I hope you're okay with me telling this, but
go ahead.
He's been so freaking nervous about this for the past month. And he would just tell me, you know, I'm going to be happy for him wherever he goes. But, you know, he's my buddy to watch the Canelo fights with. He's my buddy to watch the Chiefs game with and the Missouri games. And, you know, if he goes to Wichita State, we're not going to be able to do that together anymore. And I just... I'm going to be so sad that I'm not going to be able to do that stuff with him anymore.
But I'm
just
not telling him that. Like,
no, you were telling me that, right? Because you didn't want to put any pressure on Phil to feel like he had to, you know, and it just...
I vent a lot to Nate in the commercial break, so he's like my counselor. I put a lot on his plate. So
I'm so happy for you guys, man. That's great. Yeah. That's
the most
awesome.
Biased indifference I've ever seen.
Right.
And I've only been here for an hour.
And let me tell you, Wichita State was great. That school was awesome. That visit was fantastic. Like I said, I would have been unbelievably happy for him if you picked that, but
10 times better.
Hashtag Rue up, though. But that's my school, and he's going to go to that school and the Block Business School and everything else.
But so he's making a great choice. And so awesome.
You have that Chiefs gear on. Do you have the Rue gear underneath or only on the computer? I see it on the computer.
I wore it yesterday.
Oh, okay.
On the show,
Susan,
just as a kind of.
Rue gear.
Oh, yeah. No, she's got. She's my daughters are going to be very angry because they were already deciding what they were going to do with Phil's room. Not yet, girls. Not yet.
My favorite part of this whole thing was how Phil was messing with you for the past month.
No, because like even last week, I went and picked him up the other day at school. You know, he walks out wearing a Wichita State shirt. I go, just tell me. Let's not do this.
That's my boy.
Let's just do this.
You got hands. You got to use it. You don't have.
And I thought he was really just. I didn't know he's.
Just think how the Twins have leverage now, because they're going to walk into their dad and say, "I think we're going to go to Wichita State."
No.
Because we don't have a room that we were counting on down here.
And I've also been informed there's zero chance of going to the same place. And they want to be as far away from each other as possible. That's going to be great. I need to take a break and compose myself and go.
Congratulations to the St. John family, especially to mom, and happy birthday to Phil.
That's
from Mike Boddicker and Stan Weber. We're here together for the first time ever.
As well. And that rhymes.
What a momentous occasion this is.
We will take a break while I go and compose myself in the bathroom. Back after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Am I supposed to do the rest of the show or? Okay,
yeah,
great.
Should be in a good mood.
Well, it's almost 10 o'clock, right?
I was worried about the other way.
No, dude, hey, this might be,
Good seeing you, Mike.
I'm getting there.
Can we have two conversations going on at the same time?
Mike Boddicker.
I had to see where Phil was.
Thank you, Mike.
Later.
Oh, boy.
Mike, thanks for getting us together, Jake.
Yeah. Yeah. Hopefully we can all get together soon, Jake. See, I like Stan still. He's just poking.
No, I'm not poking. I listen on the radio. I take this stuff seriously.
Yep.
I heard what I heard.
Does. You heard what did you hear? That he was going to put it together and there was
he
no
thought
problem.
Of an idea. He didn't say he was going to do it. He said this would be an interesting idea. That's what I heard him say.
And this is all, I'm not going to bring it up again until Monday. But give me like best case, theoretically, like when do you want this? What's your time frame?
June.
You're looking at you think June?
I think June.
Okay.
I think June. I think like middle end of June. I think.
Are we looking at a weekend or a weeknight?
Or a 5 a.m. before the show?
No, we better have a weekend.
Sporting's got a couple of weekends off in June.
We better have a week. I mean, right? Am I wrong?
No, it's a weekend. It's gotta be a weekend.
Mike Boddick, a weekend. I mean,
it's
gotta
be a weekend.
I don't want to be. It's like 9:30. Well, I gotta get up early.
I've worked pretty much.
It's gonna be a weekend. It's gonna be in June is where I'm targeting.
I'm happy about that because Sporting has a couple weekends off.
I'll make sure Sporting is the weekend that they're playing.
And I got a summer gig that I haven't announced yet on the air that we'll talk about in the coming weeks, but we have to work around that. But we'll figure out a weekend in June and make sure Sporting's playing and we'll be good to go.
Exactly.
Not playing.
You jerks.
Mike's over there. That's right.
Mike Boddicker is telling us stories about how, as a Major League Baseball player and the old school style that we used to have, he was not there for the birth of his oldest son because of fog and planes not making it where they needed to be. So, Nate, you know, if he can miss his son's birth, you can miss our party.
That's true. Good point.
That's right.
That's right.
It's not like anybody's going to miss me, so, you know.
I might.
You got a job to do, man.
That's right.
No, we can't have the party without you. But you're assuming there's going to be a party, so I don't know what you're complaining about now.
That's a good point.
You know, we can't have the party without you, but I think what we're going to do is we're going to have you with no party. So how about that?
There you go.
Jake, no pressure, but a tremendous amount of pressure on you.
You guys are jerks.
Well, I'm just letting you know. Hey, who started it? You and Jared Sutton hatched this plan.
It's for charity. So
It'll get done. Now we're talking. All right. Stan Weber, we had Gary Barnett on the show yesterday. And we like to have him on before the draft every year to talk about quarterbacks. And he always has some interesting things to say. And so I wanted to ask you what you thought. It's fascinating for people that like us that love football, love the draft. When San Francisco made that big move up to 3, like, who are they getting? Who they want? What are they doing this for?
And what are they going to do with Garoppolo?
Right. I don't know. Whatever it is, he'll overthrow somebody and... Well, I'm sorry. You know what? What do I got to be mean-spirited for?
I mean, he could be their Alex Smith.
Yeah.
I mean, they bring a quarterback in, let him sit on the bench for a year, and
I was just saying it's so intriguing.
Right. It's
a good question.
Or they draft someone and say, bye-bye.
If he moves, which team is going to get him? I mean, it's
New England.
Chicago. I've said a long time that the NFL has just been killing it this offseason.
They have.
Keeping themselves at the top of the mind of sports fans.
And by the way, let me remind you, the Royals are in first place after last night's victory. They're 7-4 right now. They won 7-5 over the Toronto Blue Jays.
And they're going to play a full season.
And Jake Junis looked good, so that's back-to-back good starts after a strong spring, and he's got the cutter. And now we get, I mean, that's something else to be excited about, especially after Keller pitched well. We find out Josh Staumont wasn't hurt, and then Jake Junis backs it up with another good start, and the Royals beat the Blue Jays, and they're 7-4, and it's all good in baseball. We'll talk more about that with Mike McFarland at 8:05, and I laugh, like you think Gary's going to be done on time to talk to Mike McFarland at 8:05. Why do you even write that on the schedule? It should be 8:15, because Gary says so. But the point is that I was making, we were talking to Gary Barnett, and we asked him about this, and I said, look, I know that all this buzz is out there, that San Francisco moved up for Mac Jones, but they can't pass on Justin Fields, can they? Are they really going to go with Mac Jones? And then I was happy to hear that Gary Barnett said, look, I've got Trevor Lawrence number one, and he said, even though he loves Wilson out of BYU, he has Justin Fields number two of these quarterbacks that are supposed to go in the top 10, and then he has Wilson three, Mac Jones four, and then Trey Lance five. And look, is he going to be right? Who knows? But I'll listen to him before I'll listen to myself or listen to Jake in there nodding his head about everything. What do you think of that? With San Francisco moving up to three, and this is going to be a domino effect and everything else, what happens with the rest of the draft, do you think that they really are moving up for Mac Jones, or do you think this is all just a smokescreen and they're taking Justin Fields?
I would find it hard to believe that they're going to go for Mac Jones. Justin Fields is an interesting case, and I don't know how to project these college quarterbacks and their success level in the pros. I think it's very, very hard. Once in a while, I have a strong opinion about a player, but I can't force it. I can't get on here and say, well, you're supposed to be an expert, so you got to have a strong opinion. Too many times there's a question. Justin Fields is one of those guys that I have questions about, but then you think what he did in the college football playoff semifinals, and he looked so great. I mean, the throws that he made, the plays that he made, he looked like one of those new dominant do-it-all type quarterbacks. He's been around the big time. Columbus, Ohio is not a small town. I always talk about Patrick Mahomes' ability to come to this town, an NFL city, and be the main man every day. Anything he tries to do, walk out of his house, there's a spotlight on him. It is a hard role to have, to be the quarterback of the NFL team and to handle all the things that come with it, to keep your concentration level, not get big-headed, and all those type of things. It helps that Justin Fields is in Columbus, Ohio. That's like a pro team there. If you haven't been around Ohio State, and if you hadn't been around Columbus, Ohio, he's at least experienced some of that. The thing that I like about him is, in his pro day type of work, he's had the guts to do about the exact opposite of what the greatest prospects have done the last 5 to 10 years. Jake knows more about this probably, but a lot of times they just come shake a few hands, talk, and don't want to show any physical abilities or put themselves on the line and prove themselves, be competitive. That's not the guys that I thought about growing up. I would think that they would want to go out there and show they're the best. You want me to do a pro day? I'm going to go light it up for you because I want to be great every day. And Justin Fields is doing it for a second time. I mean, that to me is unbelievable. That's the kind of competitiveness that makes me feel more comfortable about him. But all these quarterbacks have giant questions. You think about Wilson. I love some of the things that he does, but he's not the biggest guy, and he did it at BYU. Has he played against the highest level of competition? Is he going to be able to do that down after down? I'm not so sure that it's an easy selection to take him. I'm not quite as high on Trevor Lawrence as everyone else is. I think if you go back and watch, they show video all the time on TV and go, this is the greatest play ever. And I go, that ball's thrown a half a yard short of where it would be. It's interception in the NFL. I mean, he's playing at stinking Clemson, and he's been told that he's great and he's fast and all that stuff. I don't know if he's going to be such a killer. They talk about him being, what, Andrew Luck or one of these once every 10-year quarterbacks, or Patrick Mahomes once every 25-year quarterbacks. I'm not so sure. But how do you go to a quarterback? How do you go to Lance when he's played at North Dakota State and only played one game this year? Didn't even play. They only had one game in the fall. Didn't play in the spring. How ready is he going to be? You know, I've got giant questions about that. So, and then Mac, I mean, you're talking about a team full that's as good. In 3 years, if Alabama would stay together and play 3 years from now, they would have a 5-11 or 6-10 record in the NFL, just with the guys they have. You know how many first-round – the wide receivers are all first-round picks. The center's a superstar. the team's always ahead. I mean, I love what Mac did on the field. I loved his composure and how he threw the ball accurately, but...
But here's a stereotype. Like Jake said, he don't want an Alabama quarterback. That's a blanket stereotype. Is there something there to that? Like, you know, he's got
NFL stars around him all the time, and you're never under stress. You're always ahead.
A.J. McCarron looked pretty damn good when he was down there.
So. And your wide receivers.
I like Joe Burrow coming out of LSU. I thought he was the real deal. I thought he did it with the Bengals. Mac has some of Joe Burrow in him. His accuracy, his brain, his ability to work in the pocket, but he doesn't get away from the sack very well at all. And that may be the end of the story.
Right.
Look at the Oklahoma State quarterback that's with the Pittsburgh Steelers right now.
Rudolph.
Yeah, Mason Rudolph. I loved what Mason Rudolph did in the pocket. And at Oklahoma State, he's underrated. But I was very high on him, how he had an ability to make all the NFL throws. But you know what kills him? He can't move in the pocket like a Tom Brady. Tom Brady can keep himself alive with a little slide, and then he rips the ball. You watch Rudolph, he's sacked. And I'm worried about Mac Jones going, man, he would have ripped that ball. He read the coverage. He knew where he was going to go. He dictated to the free safety. He had everything he wanted. But oh, darn it, he got grabbed and thrown to the ground rather than moving in a pocket. So I think he's an intriguing case. Mac Jones could be hosting a Super Bowl trophy someday if he's around the right team. Because I think he's going to make an accurate throw. He's going to study the playbook. He's not going to get cocky. I love his makeup, but if he's not with a very good pocket, if he doesn't have the big boys protecting him, he's going to get sacked way more than he should.
Okay, so you and the other question I wanted to ask you that I asked Gary Barnett, I've enjoyed reading, and there's been articles written about it. They get into deep analytics about what's more important for a young quarterback. And Cincinnati fans are torn, right? So you mentioned Joe Burrow. He had a devastating injury to end the season. And so your instinct is, boy, get some big guys to protect that kid, right? And at number five, most people feel like they're going to have a chance to take and Gary Barnett said Sewell from Oregon and Slater from Northwestern are guys that are ready to be your starting left tackle from day one and be your guy there. But you also have a chance to draft Pitts or Jamar Chase and give him an elite guy that's going to get
Pitts.
Open.
Weapons. I still think Atlanta might take him.
But Pitts or Jamar Chase,
right,
you're going to have one of those elite level guy that's going to give, that in theory, is going to give him his Travis Kelce or whatever name you want to put in there, right? If you're Cincinnati, if you're you're a fan of Joe Burrow, what are you going to give him with that number five
weapons.
Pick? The left tackle or the weapon?
Weapons always for me.
Listen to Stan Weber say a weapon. Jake?
Elite pass receivers, tight ends especially, or wide receivers. They can get open quickly so the line doesn't matter, and they can get open quicker than other players if they're elite, which means you can throw the ball a little faster and you protect the line by them being open. If your line protects an extra, 0.2 seconds is a big deal in the NFL, 0.5 seconds, but your guys have not separated downfield, you're still in trouble if you can't move and make plays and do all those things. So I think the NFL is about the weapons. And all my offensive line buddies, who are my best friends, by the way, can get mad at me again for saying I'm downgrading the importance of the offensive line. I think you can figure it out, fix it, put it together every year, mix and match pieces, and work it. It's more about the quarterback's ability to get rid of the ball, know what he's doing, and his weapons get open and hurt the other team than the offensive line for me.
And since Grunhardt's coming up at 9 o'clock, we at least stayed on the air. Boy, it just doesn't matter who snaps in the ball. You can get any.
No, I love the center. The centers are the most important. They're like the quarterback.
That's not what I wanted to hear.
No, you're not going to hear me say anything bad about it.
Just for Grunhardt.
No, Tim Grunhardt is the real deal, and centers are the real deal. That's not just because I know Tim, and I'm buddies with Tim.
Andy Harding's going to smash a stereo that he's listening to right now.
This guy's chomping at the bit now. What do you got? What do you got?
To find an elite-level tackle, you're picking the top five. You can find weapons like Tyreek Hill. You can find those guys later in the draft, but it's not too often you have an opportunity to draft a franchise left tackle, and that's what Sewell is. I mean, that's
a great point.
But some people have Slater ahead of him, though. Jeremiah
does.
It's 10 to 15 years investment too with those linemen. I mean, that's the thing. They don't usually get injured. They're there. They're a rock. I have no problem with people who want to build that way.
They took Eric Fisher, number one overall. How long did he lock it down for? We're in the year of our Lord 2021, and his run's over. That was a hell of a run, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that was a great pick for the Chiefs. It turned out being a really damn good pick, one of the best in the first round. If you look at that draft, that draft was garbage.
Yeah, that first
round was trash. But I understand you do need to get Burrow weapons, but I think you can find other avenues to get him those weapons when you can for sure lock down one of those two top tackles.
Unless you think Chase or Pitts is such, I mean, because some people think that about Chase, so far and above where it's like, yes, you can get weapons, but you can't get a guy like this. It's the evaluation, right, of what you think of him.
But, I mean, you just look at the top receivers in the league. I mean, it's like they're usually, I mean, most of them are first-round draft picks, but Tyreek Hill isn't.
DK Metcalf wasn't.
Right. And so, like, you can, but you look at all the left tackles, almost all of those guys.
Well, to back up, I guess to add on to Jake's point here, I'm curious what you think of this, Stan. The idea that, because you talked about mixing and matching the offensive line, I'm kind of thinking of, like, in a bullpen, if you have that one dominant closer, is it easier to kind of piece together the rest of the bullpen? Or with an offensive line, if you got one guy that you know what? We don't have to help on that side. We can lead, like with Willie Rofe, when he was there for the Chiefs, it was like, we don't have to chip over there. We can help. We can direct the rest of our scheme to help out the other guys. Is that worth it if you have a guy on your offensive line that you don't have to worry
having
about?
Having a great offensive line and a great left tackle and investing in left tackles who are producing for 10 years, more likely than a running back who's going to be good for 3 years.
Right.
I mean, I get it all. I'm not trying to say it doesn't matter. I'd like to have it all. But I would just give you this equation right here. The Kansas City Chiefs getting ready for the 2021 season. Would you rather have Travis Kelce or not have Travis Kelce and have a great left tackle?
No, I'd rather have Travis Kelce.
I mean, right now, just give me the best left tackle in the NFL to protect Patrick and don't have Travis Kelce. That's my choice. Do you want the weapon or do you want the left tackle? I want Travis Kelce.
Yeah.
And that's just because he's more elite than other tight ends. And this is where my offensive line friends get mad at me. You can be an elite left tackle, but really, how much better are you than the average left tackles? I mean, really, how much of the game does it really affect that one or two plays that you know, if a guy gets two sacks from the defensive end position, he's all pro Hall of Fame, right? I mean, he could play average the whole game and get two sacks every game. That'd be 32 sacks a year. Elite all time. So it's just a couple of plays a lot of times. This is my easiest example. You want a new Chiefs need a left tackle. If God came down and said, you get the best left tackle in the NFL right now, but you got to have Travis Kelce sit out for the year.
No,
I'll take a mediocre left tackle and Travis Kelce.
And so, that's what I'm saying. It's not. I'm not against either. I want both.
And this is also a reminder, too, because I feel like he's getting plenty of love, but Ja'Marr Chase didn't play last year, right? And so we're forgetting what 2019 was with Ja'Marr Chase. Let me just remind you. 14 games, 84 catches, 1,780 yards, averaged 21 yards a catch and 20 touchdowns.
So
he was un-freaking believable.
And who threw to him?
Joe Burrow. And there were some. So here's the tough part for me about Chase, and evaluators could probably tell me how I'm all wet on this. Mm-hmm. But
soaking wet.
The two stud burners from Alabama last year, I thought were going to walk into the NFL and tear it up. And they didn't really. They had some good moments, but they didn't just tear it up. And I
Justin Jefferson was awesome.
Kind of like,
yeah, he was.
He was. And who'd he play for?
LSU.
So how much of what Ja'Marr Chase did was because they could only guard him one-on-one because they also had to worry about Jefferson and Moss and Clyde Edwards-Helaire and this all-world quarterback. I think that kind of some of what we talk about with the Alabama quarterback, sometimes it's hard to evaluate how good they are because they're throwing to guys that have 10 yards separation all the time. I think in some ways it can be hard to evaluate how good is this wide receiver because he's never getting double covered. He's got weapons all around him and a stud NFL quarterback throwing him the ball. With those numbers,
Chase
I think
is
Chase
incredible.
Is going to be really good.
He's
I do think he's going to be really good, but I think, does that make sense?
Well,
in terms of how
let me just jump on the other side to be fair because there needs to be balance. What you're saying is the unpredictability of these wide receivers, and you're creating situations because they play on great teams, but just period. Go back to what Jake says and look over the last few drafts. We're getting more wide receiver talent than ever before
mm-hmm.
because they're playing the offense that is the NFL offense mm-hmm. in college and high school. So if you went and looked at these guys, it's kind of a 50-50 deal, and you can't tell me which one are going to be the stars and which one aren't. So yeah. it's less predictable. These quarterbacks, they're so valued that they may go the first five picks or something like that. We know how it's even changed. Patrick Mahomes was taken early at number 10.
Yeah.
Not number 4, not number 2, number 10.
Third quarterback.
How fast is this changing? Yeah. Okay, but it's very unpredictable. Do you have Ryan Leaf or do you get Peyton Manning? I mean, right. No one knows for sure how this all works out. The left tackle position is much more predictable. A player who supposedly doesn't cut it. How about Fisher? Yeah. Year two, Chiefs fans. Oh, what are we doing with this guy? If you don't even think he's performing, he will perform. So it's a first-round pick, and you need a left tackle. You're going to keep him for longer, probably 10 years or more, and it's much more predictable that they're going to perform. Does that make sense?
It's a safer pick. Yeah.
So if you don't want your variability, like I said, I want a weapon. If you told me I want Tyreek Hill, yes, but we didn't know he was Tyreek Hill when he came out of college.
All right, let me ask you this, because Daniel Jeremiah weighed in on this thing, and I thought he said something really interesting, and maybe this will, and maybe it won't sway Jake, but it kind of swayed me, because they were tweeting to Daniel Jeremiah, hey, what do you think? Like kind of what Jay said, the opportunity to get this elite left tackle and lock that down versus getting the elite weapon. And Daniel Jeremiah leaned towards getting the elite weapon because he said, we're so focused on getting the franchise left tackle, whatever else. He said, after talking with evaluators, offensive line coaches, GMs, offensive linemen, the success of an offensive line, especially in the NFL, is not defined by how good your best offensive lineman is. It's defined by how bad your worst offensive lineman is.
The weakest link theory.
The weakest link.
Oh, I learned
and
that
you
when
can
I was
get
a
away
in high school.
With having, I'm not saying a bad, but an average to above average left tackle if across the board you're strong and there's no weak link. But you
you're
can
only
have,
as good as your weakest link.
And you could have a franchise left tackle, but if your right guard sucks or whatever else, that's how it's defined. And they said it's more important to have these elite weapons and to operate under that theory. Now, look, you're not going to turn your nose up at a franchise left tackle if you get them, right? But there's so much focus on who the best guy is on your line versus everything's defined by who the worst guy is, because in the NFL, they'll find it quick and they will attack it. See Super Bowl.
And how
a
they
few
come together.
Ago, Jake.
And that's how your center, the glue, your center's the glue. How does he bring them? They can play better than the individual parts, even. If they're given good strategy by the coaches, if they pull together and work together and learn to communicate even without talking and passing off blocks and not missing blocks is the most important thing. Being an assignment sound is better than being a physical, awesome player. And don't forget the quarterback as well.
Right.
Peyton Manning's going to protect his offensive line. He's going to get rid of the football. I think you can just get around some of those items. But when we say we want a weapon, we act like it's easy and we know which weapon we're going to take. And right now, if we said, guys, you're on the board, you three are picking for whichever team, the Bengals, you're going to pick a weapon, only quarterbacks have been taken, which guy are you going to take? Even at Alabama, you go, I'm not sure which receiver I'm going to take. Or are we going to go to LSU? I think I'm going to go with the tight end of Florida.
Yep, Pitts. Absolutely.
I mean, I think I'd take Pitts before them.
I think Atlanta's going to take him. I mean, because he is just a mismatch nightmare.
And if they don't, if it's Pitts versus Sewell, are you still taking Sewell or are you taking Pitts?
Luckily I don't have to make that decision. But so Pitts has me at a different level than
he has you shook
than any other of the wide receivers because he's a different type of player.
By the way,
there are plenty of receivers that are close to those elite in second, third, fourth round.
That's what I mean.
But we know tight ends are matchup
right.
Tight ends can create
the Kelce's, the Gronkowski's. You don't have many other tight ends that are hurting people. And the line's best friend / the quarterback's best friend is the tight end because every blitz can be taken care of with a tight end taking two steps. Jason Witten could hardly run, and he was still an elite tight end. You know why? As soon as someone blitzed, he read it, took the perfect steps, three steps, turned around, bang, got the ball, and you have a 7-yard gain instead of a sack. Who cares who your left tackle is in that situation?
And by the way, you were talking about the LSU team from 2019. They're three wide receivers. Justin Jefferson, Ja'Marr Chase, and then Terrence Marshall Jr., who I want the Chiefs to take in the first round this year. And so, yeah, and Jefferson had 1,500 yards. Chase had almost 1,800 yards, and they combined for 38 touchdowns. Now,
Clyde Edwards-Helaire in
right,
the backfield.
That's exactly right.
Joe Burrow.
So we
I still think Ed Orgeron doesn't know how to coach, by the way.
Well, you know what? I think you put Jake at head coach with that talent, they're doing you know, they're doing
point.
Pretty damn good.
That's my point.
So so do we all apply this then to the Chiefs at number 31? If a left tackle that they like is there, but there's an opportunity to get maybe similar talent in the second round versus Terrence Marshall Jr. or a wide receiver that they love that falls, are you going to want the left tackle or are you going to want the wide receiver at number 31?
So I will actually take a quote that I heard from Daniel Jeremiah and turn it back around.
No.
And this applies more to what the Bengals are doing than the Chiefs. He said that in his opinion, in the early stages of an NFL quarterback's career, you protect him with brawn. Later in his career, you protect him with brains. Because of exactly what you said, Stan, the quarterback that's been around and knows the offense, like Tom Brady, he knows where all the blitzes are coming from. He knows what the hot reads are. He knows where to turn his protection, and he can protect himself almost with his brains. Early in a career, when a quarterback's still kind of learning a lot of those things, you might need more brawn, more offensive linemen up front to just help him, buy him an extra second or two as he's learning the system. So that's one of the things. I'm a little more risk-averse. I'd rather have the thing. If I'm going to invest that much in a first-round pick, I think I'd rather have the thing that I know I can at least count on for that 6 years of his contract. When it comes to the Chiefs, you're later in the draft. You're down at the bottom of the first round. That's very different to me than having a top five pick. And you got a quarterback that does know. He's been in the league for a while now. You know, he has a deeper understanding of the offense and all that.
Drum roll, please. You What's know, your choice?
If there is a
Chiefs
a,
at 31,
if there's, well, he's what they think around. If there's an elite talent at a playmaking position, I'm all for it. Now, if they think we got five guys that are all the same and we can get one of those in the second round, I'd rather have an offensive lineman. But if there's an elite talent there, I'll take this.
Just to show you, that's a great question, and the balance in my mindset, I would take care of the offensive line for the Kansas City Chiefs.
Me too.
Patrick Mahomes can make average receivers great. He can get them the time. DeMarcus Robinson, everyone's not excited about him. But Patrick Mahomes... Well, Byron Pringle, remember the game when he took forever and Byron started on the left side and crossed over? Was that against Buffalo?
Bills.
You know, Patrick Mahomes made Byron
down.
Pringle did a good job, but Patrick Mahomes stayed alive forever. The Chiefs, in the situation they are, I'm very comfortable going offensive line before searching for that weapon at 31.
Yeah.
But at number of, and for Cincinnati, the problem they have, Joe Burrow can't move that well. They may have to go offensive line. But generically, if I'm in a top five, and I'm trying to find a way to win, and I've got a quarterback that I believe in, I'd go weapons. And for the Chiefs, tackle.
And look, Jake, people say Jake's crazy, but if they're both available, Jake says Nick Bolton, linebacker Mizzou. I get it. I understand. You want
what round?
Linebacker. Now, he says 31, so I'm trying to get on board with him. I don't know.
He's putting
what
you
round
on.
Are you predicting, you though, Steven? This is important.
I think he could have a chance to go at the end of the first round, but second round for sure.
Okay.
I keep seeing him go to Green Bay in mock drafts, but that's fine. I think he's going to be a hell of a pro. I think that was a good conversation, and I still have no idea what I want with number pick 31, so that's fine.
I've never met personally Mike Boddicker, but I believe in what he talks about and how he breaks things down. It's so logical to me, but I do know Gary Barnett very well, and he's the same way. So when I hear Gary talk, it's like, you know, I know exactly what's coming. And love hearing him as well.
Yeah,
so,
you learn a lot.
Sorry, I missed him. I wish he were in studio today as well. But
he's never been in studio. If that happens, that's going to be a hell of an occasion.
No, Gary Barnett is an old, old buddy. In fact, I'm the one who introduced him to Sports Radio 810. He was a guest on College Game Day.
I didn't know that.
Oh, absolutely.
That's awesome.
No, I know him. I know him because of Dan Wetmore in town. He went to Mizzou.
Yeah.
And they were buddies. And Dan Wetmore, when he was a Northwestern coach, said, I'm best friends with Gary Barnett. And I got, you got to be kidding me. So he hooked us up. We started talking to each other. I say, I have this show on Saturday morning on Sports Radio 810, 50,000 watts, heard all over the Midwest. We'd love to have you on. So we started having Gary Barnett on as a guest. And your old producer said,
Aaron
hey.
Sports?
Aaron said, hey, do you have his number? And he really, I'm glad he played it that way. So you get to hear him every week with you guys. Because we only do guests, Danny and I, once a year. That's, you know, we don't have that many shows. We got 14 shows or so. So we have Gary once. It's awesome you guys have him every week. But yeah, I know Gary very well.
Stan Weber with the assist with Gary Barnett on the Border Patrols. Thank you, Stan, very much for your time. It's a hell of an hour.
Congratulations to you and your son and your whole family. Another kid hitting the 18-year age.
That's right.
Congratulations.
Then when the...
halfway there.
When it happens to the twins, I will collapse on the air if I'm still on the radio. We will take a break back after this on WHB.